youth retreat called Bigfoot, and afterwards, oftentimes I would take the male counselors on a trip as a reward, usually to go whitewater rafting, and I'm sure you've heard versions of this story before. And one year we took a bunch of the boys to a place that we thought would be really exciting. You know, it was like supposedly class 4 level whitewater rafting, and when we got there, the river was not moving. It was so slow that you could park your boat in the middle of the river and it was perfectly calm, and the boat wouldn't move unless you had to paddle. So you had to actually paddle to get where you're going. The water wouldn't carry you anywhere. And so I was starting to get a little distressed, thinking like, wow, this isn't going to be very fun. The boys don't seem like they're having a very good time. And so Robert and I, what we did was we saw on the far edge of the bank of one part of the river as we were paddling through it, and the boys were starting to get frustrated and hot and sweaty and tired, that there was these huge kind of cliffs that were standing above the water, and there was like a tree that was growing out of the side of this cliff, and someone had built a homemade platform. We didn't know if this was somebody's backyard on the river or that they had built like a kind of swing contraption, and we decided to pull our boat over and to give the boys something more interesting to do than just paddling down the river all afternoon. We thought, let's do some cliff jumping. And so we climbed up onto this platform and climbed up into this tree, and you're looking down, it's probably a good 25, 30 feet over the water surface. And it's pretty awesome. And as we kind of like reached over and then started debating amongst each other, like, well, who should go first? Because, you know, like all these like manly men were, none of us were brave enough to kind of take the plunge. And so, of course, naturally, yours truly was the first to go. And I was very excited, you know, and I got to tell you, I screamed like a little girl. As I was coming over the water, and I felt like, and I know it wasn't really happening, but it felt like the G-force was pulling my face, and I started screaming like you would not believe, like I was a 7-year-old little girl. It's incredible. And I have to tell you, I had the most fun. I was screaming so loud because I was enjoying myself to death. It was wonderful. And there's a lot of other stories I can tell you about this experience, some of them including losing like your pants and losing your clothes and swimsuits, but I won't go into those details. What I do want to share with you is that we did have one friend who came with us who decided he wouldn't participate. He had his kind of excuse was, well, you know, I have to go to work the next day, and I don't want to catch a cold and get sick by going into the water. And I was like, are you serious? And like, you know, all the boys, like, we were having such a great time. We were yelling and screaming, and I wish I could describe to you the glorious freedom of taking this rope and swinging across the water, which felt like at like 100 miles an hour. Of course, not literally, but it felt like it, you know, and just screaming at the top of your lungs and plunging into this crisp water on a hot summer day. It's glorious. And the amount of laughter, just childlike, uproarious laughter that the boys and I were having. But I couldn't describe to this one brother what it was like. And he missed out on such a great experience that the rest of us had. I couldn't explain it to him about why it was so fun. I couldn't convince him with the cleverness of words because he did not experience it for himself. I wonder for many of us how often that's the case with when it comes to experiencing the reality of God. Many of us come to church or maybe claim to be Christians for many years, but the truth is we don't really know what it's like to experience the goodness of God, to experience the reality of Christ in our daily lives. We hear about it, we think about it, but we don't experience it because we don't take the plunge ourselves. And so this morning, we're going to be talking about how do imperfect people like you and me begin to hear and experience God and become everything that He intends. But before we do, let's pray. God, our Father, I want to give thanks to You for bringing us here this morning. And even though the weather is a little bit damp, we just praise You. We praise You because we sense Your presence, Your nearness. You are the sovereign one over all of creation. You bring sunshine. You bring rain. You bring laughter. And You bring tears. But God, through all the things that are going on in our lives, storms or sunshine, good or ill, we say, great is Your name. Blessed be Your name. This morning, Lord, we ask that You would speak to us, that Your word would penetrate us, that it wouldn't be clever stories or an interesting theory, but that we would taste and see for ourselves the goodness of Christ and experience the reality of experiencing the goodness of Christ lived out in our daily lives. And so, God, bring forth Your kingdom in Jesus' name. Amen. If you have a Bible, you'll want to turn in it to Judges chapter 6, verse 11. If you don't know where Judges is, the first five books of the Bible are Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and then after that, there's three in a row. Joshua, Judges, Ruth. That's how I remember it. Don't judge Ruth. That's not very nice. So Judges is right in the middle between Joshua and Ruth. We're in the middle of our series, How Imperfect People Become All That God Intended. And we're answering the question, what if the deepest longing sewn into the fabric of our soul is to express and experience the love of the most beautiful, greatest, most knowledgeable, most caring being in the universe? And so we're discovering together how imperfect people do life with the one who loves you more than any other. And as we've been going through this series, you remember that previously we've been talking about recognizing our thirst and desires of our heart. And then secondly, restoring our relationship to God, reorienting our life with Christ, reconnecting with God through prayer. And today, we're not only going to be talking about talking to God and listening to Him, but also hearing and experiencing God as we take risks to respond to the adventure that He's calling us to in our lives. Now, in the book of Judges, we're talking about let me give you a little bit of background. There's a time in the history of God's people, in the nation of Israel, between when Joshua led the Israelites into the promised land and before Samuel, this prophet, anointed Saul as the first king. And so during this time, it's a kind of spiritual downward spiral where the people of God are unfaithful to Him. What they're doing is they're turning to, they kind of conform to the society around them and started practicing Canaanite worship in this land of Canaan and worshiping these gods called Baal and Asherah along with their God. And so what happens is God raises up 12 leaders, what we call judges, to implement God's plan and break into the reality of their lives. And so in verse 1 of this chapter, what we find is that the Israelites, they're performing evil in the sight of God. And so He brings about this judgment. He allows the Midianite people, this other group of people, to come in and oppress them. They're basically raising their crops and destroying all their land and stealing all their animals and leaving them little to nothing of their own personal belongings. And in verse 7, the people are crying out to God, and God reminds them that they are the ones who turned away despite His past faithfulness. And so this is the backdrop that we're looking at as we take a look into this chapter. So this morning, let's take a look together at a very imperfect person and see what we can learn from his interaction with God in verse 11. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash, the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." "But sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all His wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian." The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have, and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" "But Lord," Gideon asked, "how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." The Lord answered, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together." Let's stop right there for a moment. Excuse me. When we look at Gideon, what we see is a fairly ordinary young man. He's living under the protection of his family, living in his father's house. In verse 11, it's very interesting. He's supposed to be threshing the wheat. And if you know anything about ancient Near East culture, a threshing floor is usually out in the open, and you have to have it outdoors because as you're threshing the wheat, you're kind of throwing the wheat grains up into the air so that the chaff can blow away in the wind. So that's the way you thresh wheat, right? Because you're trying to separate the edible part from the husk, the chaff of the wheat. And what's happening here is he's hiding in a wine press. For those of you who know about ancient Near East culture, what it looks like is it's kind of a big hole dug into the ground where all the grapes are poured, and you kind of trample on them to smush out the grapes and scrape out the juice. And what Gideon is doing is instead of threshing the wheat out in the open, he's hiding in the wine press because he's afraid of the Midianites. And so that's what he's like in verse 11. He's kind of a chickeny kind of guy, or maybe practical thinking from your perspective. Now, verse 13 gives us a little bit more about his character. Gideon's response to God's reminders are, well, if you know you're talking about God, where's this God who did all these wonderful deeds of the past and who was supposed to take care of his people? You know, He's given us over into the hands of the Midianites. And so he's kind of responding with a lot of doubt and fear. He's far from perfect in his state. He wrestles with personal doubt. He wrestles with personal fears. And he sees his circumstances, that these Midianites who have been allowed free reign to terrorize the Israelites, he sees these circumstances are more as more worthy of his trust and his fear than God himself. And I wonder to myself as I was reading through this passage, aren't we a little bit like that? You know, there are times when we get physically sick and face illness. For those of you who are younger, maybe there are moments when you have too much homework and you wonder, where's God? When you have a difficult coworker that you don't know how to deal with, and we fear that person more than we fear God. When there are times as you've watched the economy turn, your stocks and your mutual funds crashing and your future retirement plans kind of burning up in flames, that we fear those circumstances more than God. When we receive a rejection letter from the schools that we applied to, or maybe a job that we applied to, when we lose our jobs, when we have disagreements in our family and in our relationships, when things don't go according to our plans, the tendency is for us to have a greater trust and greater fear in the power of our circumstances than in the very God of creation. And so in verse 15, even when God consoles Gideon, he's quick to make excuses about, like, well, no, you can't send me. I'm from the weakest clan, and I'm, you know, very inadequate, and this and that. And so we find a very imperfect, inadequate person whose faith sometimes looks a little bit weak. And here's the good news for imperfect people like you and I. God chooses still to speak to us, even when we feel weak before him. And this is important for us to know, because a lot of times maybe we feel that we're incapable of taking the next step when God prompts us. Or sometimes we feel like we're unworthy or far away from God, like Gideon does. And God still loves to meet us exactly where we are. Not to be at this super level of, I'm a super Christian, super follower of Christ. But he chooses to meet Gideon in his weakness and meet him where he is. If we're willing to listen. If we're willing to connect. And so we find that we're able to approach God and talk with him and hear him, even in our moments of weakness. But what I want us to look at further is, let's unveil how God responds to this imperfect Gideon in his weakness. In verse 12, despite meeting him while he's cowering in his fear, God calls out to Gideon and he says, "Mighty man of valor." That's the literal translation of that word. And despite Gideon's fearful response, in verse 14 again, in your NIV version, it says, "Go in your strength." But it's the same word there, mighty person. Gideon, I want you to go out in your mightiness. And God again emphasizes his might, this guy who's cowering in a wine press, this young man who wants to make excuses for himself. You see, God keeps calling him mighty for a reason. God doesn't call people or call you and I because we're perfect or because we're capable. He calls us in our weakness, in the middle of our excuses, to depend on him for strength. And so what I want you to see here is, like, when I first read this passage, I thought, is God being ironic or sarcastic with Gideon, this chicken who's hiding in a wine press and who's afraid of, you know, wants to make all these excuses for himself? No. God isn't being sarcastic or ironic in this circumstance. He's actually seeing past Gideon's excuses to his potential. And I want you to think about that in the context of yourself. When you feel weak, when God is speaking to you, when God is calling you to do something or to say something, when God is prompting you. And oftentimes we make our excuses. I want you to know that he sees past our excuses to our potential. He calls Gideon mighty. Not what God hopes you can be, but instead what he knows that you are, what he made you to be. In our adult Christian education class, we're going through this book called The Adventure. It's a very exciting read that Tim kind of introduced our adult class to. And last week we read through this one interesting parable talking about a tiger living amongst goats. And what this tiger was doing was, you know, it was raised with the goats, and so it was eating grass. And when this tigress comes and finds this beautiful young male tiger and tries to convince him you're a tiger and tries to get him to stop eating grass, like, along with the goats, and behaving like a tiger and trying to awaken that ferocity, that ferocious beauty and the natural desires of a tiger. And it was a difficult process, but eventually goes through this transformation. In the same way, you and I oftentimes, this is what God is speaking to Gideon about and speaking to you and I about. When he calls us, when there are times when we're praying and he prompts you in your heart to take a step forward, a lot of times we make excuses like, no, God, you don't want me to really talk to that person. No, you don't want me to take this next chance or to make a change in this area or that area. I can't. And we make up all these excuses for ourselves. I'm a goat. I'm not a tiger. And God's trying to convince you, mighty warrior, you are not that goat that you think you are. I'm the one who made you mighty. And so I want you to think about for yourself, when there are moments when God whispers into your mind and tugs at your heart, and he's trying to get you, prompt you to do something, to take action, and it sometimes seems counterintuitive to what we know about ourselves or our circumstances. Perhaps it's in the midst of when you see wrongdoing. You, brother, are capable of speaking out against that injustice. Or you, sister, I want to encourage you, maybe God is speaking to you, share what God has done in your life with that friend that has been asking. Do the right thing when you're tempted. Reach out to someone that has maybe fallen off your radar. All these things that God sometimes prompts us with, maybe sharing a little bit more about your faith with other people, maybe speaking the truth in love to others. But when God calls you out of your comfort zone, God is speaking truth about your potential and what you can accomplish through him. Are you listening, mighty warrior? Because that's what God is calling you. Will you go where he leads when he prompts you? You see, it starts with an understanding that when God prompts you, when he tugs at your heart about something, he's leading you into something that you will go through together with him because he has made you mighty and able to do it despite your weakness. He sees past our excuses to our potential. Let's look at verse 17. Gideon replied, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me. Please do not go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you." And the Lord said, "I will wait until you return." Gideon went in and prepared a young goat from an ephah of flour he made, bread without yeast. Putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot, he brought them out and offered them to him under the oak. The angel of God said to him, "Take the meat and unleavened bread, place them on this rock, and pour out the broth." And Gideon did so. With the tip of the staff that was in his hand, the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread. Fire flared from the rock, consuming the meat and the bread, and the angel of the Lord disappeared. Let's stop right there for a second. Gideon is not a model of faith, despite what many people who have read this passage think. But to the contrary, we see in verse 17 through 18, he actually asks for a sign. He tries to force God's hand because of his lack of faith. But I want you to hear what God has been saying to him all along. In verse 12, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." In verse 14, "Save Israel, do not I send you." Verse 16, "I will be with you." In verse 18, "I will wait for you." You see, we see that God is promising his presence here. In verse 19 through 21, we see that God actually meets Gideon despite his weakness and his lack of faith with this sign to show him that I am indeed God and I am indeed with you. There's a clear message, a clear promise of his faithful presence to Gideon and to us. This is important because there's going to be moments when God will prompt your heart to do something, to take action, to go somewhere. And you need to know that he accompanies and empowers those who respond to him in faith as he prompts them. That he really wants to accompany us and lead us wherever he goes with us. That he wants to help us to accomplish the improbable, the impossible, to do things that are outside of our comfort zone. And so we need to remember, he accompanies and empowers those wherever he leads us. There was a time when I was working for, in Oakland, Affordable Home Care Services. It's a kind of an elderly service job where you go and kind of do an assessment of elderly people's home situations and see how you can place certain social service needs into their home. And our organization wasn't doing too well. As a lot of nonprofits, not always the best at running themselves. And so we were starting to lose out on some of the funding and we weren't making enough money, income coming in. And so they decided to eliminate the position that I had. Or there's only two people in my department and they had to eliminate one of the positions. Now, my coworker was an elderly woman, a grandmother, and so of course, you know, they don't want to fire her because she'd been doing the job forever. But they really appreciated the kind of hard work that I'd put in. And so they didn't want to get rid of me, and so they had offered me, instead of like having me laid off, they wanted to offer me a job in another department, in one that I had worked in previously, for Meals on Wheels. Some of you are familiar with that program. I had been the home assessment coordinator for that job, for that department for many years before. And so they were thinking about having me move from one position to the next, and I thought, that sounds great. The problem was, I found out, in order for them to move me into a parallel position in a different department, they were going to let go another woman. And at first, as I kind of thought about it, well, I was kind of in school at the time, I had a lot of student debt, and you know, I didn't know how, the way I was supporting myself through school was by working at this job. And so I was kind of thinking to myself and rationalizing, well, it's okay, you know, if I have to compete with this woman. I mean, it's only fair that the job goes to whoever's most qualified. And I kept rationalizing to myself in my circumstances, well, I need the money, so I'm going to take this job. And I started making excuses because, you know, I felt very uncomfortable with the thought of, well, what if I don't have a job and I'd have to step out in faith and let God kind of bring me into a new circumstance. But I couldn't escape the prompting God had put in my heart that, you know what, this woman that you're about to replace, whose job you're going to take, probably needs the money much more than you. If you're a young man, you can live with your parents for a little while longer. You know, if you need to, you can cut back on certain things. You don't need to go out and spend money on food and this and that, you know. And I couldn't escape that prompting, despite my excuses, despite my fear. And I was reminded that God is the one who accompanies and empowers people. And I was very reluctant, like Gideon, to obey. But after some time, I left my supervisor or the director of the program know, you know what, I'm not going to take the job. I'd rather that you keep this woman in the job because she's been working for several years and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was an amazing moment for me because my voice was trembling as I was telling them this, like thinking of like not having a job at the time and how am I going to make ends meet. But it was amazing because I saw this person couldn't believe that a young person, I was in my early 20s at the time, would be willing to sacrifice and give up something because of the convictions of their faith or because they felt God was prompting him. Kind of looked at me like, are you crazy? You know, because I was explaining to him, I really feel that the Lord is leading me to do this and that. And, you know, it wasn't a Christian agency. But what a remarkable blessing as I experienced for myself when I responded to God's prompting, how he accompanies me, how he empowers me. Because throughout the next year and a half when I didn't have a full-time job, somehow God was able to sustain me financially over the next year and a half. Whether it was through a partial scholarship from our church, whether it was sometimes I would be thinking about, well, I don't know how I'm going to pay my, you know, student loan for this month. And somehow, like, someone would just be prompted to send a check in the mail or offer a gift, a financial gift. Just the Lord was prompting me, wanted to give you this. And I saw how God accompanies you and empowers you, me personally, in my own life, when you're willing to believe and allow him to show you how he accompanies and empowers people, to prepare you for a lifetime of faith. And so like Gideon, God loves to meet us where we are, regardless of how imperfect we may be. And so I want you to hear how God is speaking into your life and mine. Like Gideon, he's meeting with us in everyday circumstances, calling us out of seeing our lives as this mundane reality or routine, and trying to bring forth his kingdom into our lives and into this world. And so in order to genuinely hear God, we need to have our perspective of ourselves reframed by God. We need to know that he speaks to us even when we feel weak. We need to know that he sees past our excuses to our potential. And we need to know that he accompanies us and empowers us in our weakness. Now, armed with the truth about this God and how he wants to speak into our lives as imperfect people and to move us to experience him and the incredible daily. Let's get practical a little bit. How does that work? What does it look like? Let's look at verse 22. Is that where I'm at? Yeah. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, "Ah, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." But the Lord said to him, "Peace, do not be afraid. You are not going to die." So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and called it, "The Lord is Peace." To this day it stands in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. That same night, the Lord said to him, "Take the second bull from your father's herd, the one 7 years old. Tear down your father's altar to Baal and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. Then build a proper kind of altar to the Lord your God on the top of this height. Using the wood of the Asherah pole that you cut down, offer the second bull as a burnt offering. Now I know you're reading this and thinking to yourself, this is all gibberish to me. Remember I gave you a little bit of background about this building an altar to Baal and Asherah, that these are two of the Canaanite gods that the Israelites had started to idol worship. And so it's interesting as we read through this passage in verse 22 to 24, Gideon perceives at last and responds with fear and trembling at meeting the God of creation, the God of history, the God of all, who produced all those wonders out of Egypt that he was questioning about. And he's facing God with fear and trembling because in Exodus chapter 33, verse 20, we're taught that no one may meet the presence and the glory of God face to face and live. And so now he's learning to fear God more than his present circumstances. No longer is he more afraid of the Midianites and the circumstances of what people might think or what the future might hold, what other kinds of things going on around him might be like. But he fears God more than these things. You see, when we recognize who we're dealing with, who's behind us, who accompanies us, it gives us courage to face whatever God lays ahead of us. And so in verse 22 to 26, instead of fearing people and the future or circumstances, God gives Gideon very specific instructions. In verse 25, he tells him to use the bull to tear down Baal's altar. This is significant because if you know anything about Canaanite worship, Baal is represented by the symbol of a bull. And so it's an insult to this Canaanite god named Baal. It shows God's power over it, using a bull to tear down the altar of this bull god. In verse 26, he tells Gideon to tear down the Asherah pole and use it for firewood in God's own sacrifice. It's an insult to Asherah to show God's power over this fake god. It's like, for those of you who follow sports, and if you're a basketball fan, you know who LeBron James is. He's this incredible man monster. He's like 6'9", 6'10", and he just dominates in so many categories. In my fantasy league that I play with some of the boys at sports, like this one guy, LeBron James, his statistics can probably beat most of my team, like all put together. It's frightening. And one of the things LeBron James is known for is, like, before his game, he has a pregame ritual where he rubs his hand in chalk, right, to get his hands, like, so he gets grip on the ball, and he takes it, throws it up in the air, and he claps his hands. And that is a LeBron James signature move. Now I want to imagine yourself. Maybe you're like me, good 5'6", standing up against a 6'10 guy, 6'9 guy. And what you decide to do is you go on the basketball court and you say, "Hey, LeBron," and you grab some chalk, throw in there. What do you think of that? And then you try to go score on him. It's quite insulting to take that which represents that person and then use it against them. And that's exactly what Gideon is being asked to do in this circumstance. God is asking this scaredy-cat, fearful Gideon to choose to make a fearless, bold statement proclaiming God's sovereignty. He brings Gideon to this moment of choice. Who or what will you fear? Who or what will you honor and will you trust? The opinions of men, what's popular or acceptable, or me, the living God? You see, God gives us specific nudges at times in our lives. In the middle of our situation, there are times when he'll bring to mind something from his word. Maybe you're in the middle of something and then suddenly a verse pops into your mind, or in some way you feel like God is burdening your heart and prompts you to action. And almost always there's a moment where we must reframe our perspective to decide, do I trust and love and fear God more, or do I trust and fear my circumstances or people more? I'm in a small group at Graceland on Thursday nights with Daniel Bo, and I asked Daniel for permission to share this story. But I remember during the summer, he was really torn. He was making a choice between, should I go into kind of like full-time ministry in missions or working maybe with like a college-type ministry or something like that, or should I go into the working world? Because he had just graduated from college. And he was torn, but his parents had kind of really recommended to him that he go into work, and so he kind of grudgingly decided to make that choice and couldn't understand, God, why have you led me to this place? Why must I do this kind of thing? But as he was going through his workplace, God was teaching him over the last several months that this was important for him to be here, that your ministry isn't necessarily like quote-unquote professional full-time vocational ministry, but this marketplace where you work at, this is your ministry. And it's going to take you time to develop friendships with people. And bless you. And the amazing thing was that over these last couple of weeks as we've been in conversation together, he's listened when God has prompted him. And there was a moment when one of his friends, one of his coworkers, started asking him some questions, going through a difficult time in his own life, and started asking him questions and prompted him, well, why are you a Christian? Daniel had a choice at that moment. Do I fear more the opinions of men, what they'll think of me if I get too crazy and religious sounding? Or do I fear and trust and love God more? And he chose to obey the prompting of God and was able, during that conversation, to not only share about his personal experience and his growth with Christ, but to share the good news that Jesus Christ loves this other friend and died for his sins and shared the gospel with this young man. Who or what will you fear and trust and respond to? Your circumstances, people's opinions, or God? God is bringing you to a moment of choice every time he prompts you, every time he speaks to your heart. I want to close by looking at one last section of this passage. In verse 27, let's just look at that one verse. So, Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord told him. But because he was afraid of his family and the men of the town, he did it at night rather than daytime. He obeys God, but he kind of does it like in a kind of a chicken-y way. And so, this, you know, he performs this action under cover of night, hoping that he won't get caught in this and that. And the story goes on, and we won't get into it today. But here's the point. Gideon may have done it as a chicken, but he does act. He takes action. Like us, sometimes he's reluctant, but the key is a willingness to respond and obey. And the point is that despite our fears and misgivings, when God calls us in our everyday life, there's a moment when you must step up and act when he speaks to you. You see, later on in chapter 6, verse 34, and all throughout chapter 7, though Gideon requires constant reminders of God's faithfulness, and he constantly tests God. I don't know why God is so patient with him, but Gideon becomes the mighty warrior that God proclaimed him to be. In fact, I want to read you something that occurs later on in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32 to 34, referring to Gideon's actions in that time period. It says that, and what more shall I say? I don't have time to you to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned into strength, and to whom became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. You see, when we look at the history of this young man, though he's afraid and although he often doubts God's goodness, when he took action, what he's remembered for is that God, as he took action and responded just little by little to what God was leading him to do, he's remembered for how God turned him into this mighty warrior who did mighty things for God's kingdom. He was able to hear the promptings of God more often and more clearly throughout his lifetime. But it started with a willingness and a responsiveness to God. So here's the bottom line question for you. Do you really want to know and experience God? To experience the supernatural in your life? To experience life transformation, purpose, contentment, peace, joy, all those real spiritual qualities? Because for those of you who are participating in this 60-60 experiment, where we spend every 60 minutes for 60 days, trying to turn our thoughts and our heart back towards God and spending some time with him. The 60-60 will not work unless you do it wide open. You're going to have to take a plunge off the cliff. You're not going to have to learn not to worry about what others will think or what your future might hold or whether or not God's sometimes counterintuitive ways can be trusted. You have to go for it. And so we need to get into the daily rhythm of radically responding in obedience when God speaks to us, when God's Spirit prompts us. Let me share one last story with you. There's a man in a church, I don't know how many of you know him, his name is Bob Liu. He's in our Chinese congregation. He's in his 80s, and he's kind of a tall, skinny guy. Great guy. You probably don't know him too well. But I like him a lot because he used to come every Friday, and he works at our church. And his job, he comes for works 2 or 3 hours a week. All he does is he prints the bulletins, and he folds them. He does that every week, this man in his 80s, because this is his way of kind of responding to God and trusting God and serving God. And he hasn't been able to do that lately because he's suffering from cancer, so I want to encourage you to pray for him. But here's the cool thing. As you talk to him, even though he's facing possibly a terminal life-threatening illness, he is unafraid, and he's at peace. And the way he talks about it is because I've experienced so much of the reality of God in my life, the reality of Christ, and it's because he's been willing to respond to the Spirit of God when he prompts. You see, part of his story and his testimony is that he's in his 80s, like I mentioned, so he was actually in China during the time of the communist revolution, during that takeover, especially when things got a little bit violent. And there was one night as the communist regime was kind of going through towns and starting to cause a lot of trouble where he really felt as he was praying that God was prompting him, just pick up your stuff and go. Pick up your stuff and go. Just leave the country. And he was trying to convince his brother, but the problem was that their family owned a shop in China. And so his brother's like, no, we can't just leave all this. This is everything that we've invested in, all of our life savings and what our lifestyle is about. You want us to leave our friends, our family, all of our financial security? You know, things will be okay. We need to stay right here. Bob didn't even pack up his clothes. He just left. He didn't take a single thing with him. That night, the communists came to his brother's shop, destroyed everything, and his brother was actually killed. And the only reason that Bob is here with us today and has had a lifetime of experiencing God was because when he listened to the prompting of the Spirit, he took a chance and he responded in obedience to where God was leading him, despite not knowing what was ahead of him. He had the faith and the willingness to act. And if there's nothing else that you remember from this morning's message, it's only when we respond in obedience to God's prompting that we get to see and experience God's presence and guidance in our lives. If you're doing the 60-60 experiment, as your watch beeps every 60 minutes, turning your thoughts to God and talking over things with Him in your mind, remember that the goal is, as you have a continuous, ongoing conversation with God moment by moment, we're trying to break the old habit of ignoring God and grow in being able to not only hear God, but to stay connected and respond, willing to do His will. This is how we begin to experience God's presence and His work in our lives, to become the person, to experience the life that God intends for us. And so I want to encourage you to keep that bulletin inside. I know most of the time, sometimes people leave it in the chair in front of them, or you throw it, toss it in the garbage. But keep that bulletin insert, because there's some thoughts in there to help you listen and respond to God throughout the week. And I want to really challenge you. You know, as we think about, how do I know if these prompting thoughts that come into my mind are from God, or if it's just my random thoughts? Let me give you just twofold practical tips. Number one, we talked about a couple times ago, remember that you need to familiarize yourself with God's commands and His will in Scripture. Now, that's the only way you can filter out whether these thoughts are really from God or from yourself. And secondly, the truth is, you will only learn if something is really from God if you learn to respond to it. The only way that you're going to learn to recognize the shepherd's voice is to practice by acting in faith, and then you'll be able to look back afterward and see if that was God working through you. Then it becomes clear if that thought was from yourself or God's prompting. And to tell you the truth, I'm almost never sure if it's God prompting me or if it's God inspired until I respond in faith. Because the only way you're going to learn to recognize His voice is by practicing responding to it. There was a time about a week ago, Melissa and I just independently came up with, had a conviction from God, where God was convicting me to just contact some friends that I hadn't seen in a while. And it was weird because I had that nagging thought over and over in my heart and my mind for quite some time. And Melissa kind of brought up the same thing, that she'd been kind of going through the day and God had been prompting her, and she couldn't shake this conviction that God had given her. And so just by faith, you know, a couple of friends that I hadn't talked to in quite a long time, and just, you know, shoot them an email, see how they're doing, and meet up with them sometime. Question was, I started asking myself, well, I don't want to bug people. I started making excuses. I started talking about my weakness and like, well, I haven't really reached out to these friends in quite some time. Blah, 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 blah. Will you respond and say, God said. And so I did. And I waited and nothing happened. Thanks, God. Thanks for making an idiot out of me. And I'd love to share the end of this story. But the bottom line was that God answered in ways that I didn't expect him to, and always at the last minute. Late Saturday night. Before, I was hoping to squeeze this story into the sermon, but it's okay. The question for you is, when God prompts you, when God speaks to you, like Gideon, regardless of your fear, regardless of your inadequacies, will you respond? You see, I've been wanting for quite some time now to ask God to bring something, like a burning bush, for us to see here at the crossing, to show what he wants us to do, to show us what he wants to do with us and through us. But I've come to recognize, until we learn as individuals to respond to God, when we become willing to obey in these little areas of life that God is prompting us, that it's impossible for God to entrust us with big dreams. And so my challenge for you this week is, as you do your 60-60, every 60 minutes, when you're turning to God and thanking him, when you're asking him, what is your will for this moment, listen. And when you feel tugging at your heart, you may not know for sure if it's God or not yet, but take an action, take a leap of faith and respond, because you won't learn to recognize his voice otherwise. Until you learn to be faithful in responding to the little things, it's impossible for God to entrust you with the great things of the kingdom that he wants to do in your life and through you. Let's pray. God, thank you for your word, and thank you for showing us that as you give us these stories and history of people of faith, we see that they're not perfect, just like us, that they don't get it always right, that they test you and they try you, and you, at the same time, you're so patient and you still call people like Gideon, people like us. And so, God, I ask for your mercy on us this morning. I can imagine the number of times each day that you're speaking to me and I ignore it, because I'm too busy, because I'm afraid to take action because of what people will think or how it might affect my future, or because it doesn't seem to make sense to me. I suspect many people in this room feel the same way. Would you give us courage this morning to start taking the hard step, the practical step of responding to you with willingness, responding in obedience when you prompt our hearts? God, would you give us courage, because we're missing out on so much of the reality of you. I know that you want to bring forth the kingdom of Christ in our lives and into this world through us, to give people a glimpse of Christ through us. But we need you to accompany us and to empower us, God. Would you give us the courage to not only speak to you, but to listen. Not only to listen, but to respond. God, help us to see we're missing out on so much of the reality of you. How many stories people tell of your goodness that we hear about from other people's lives. But we want to have our own stories of your greatness in us, in our lives. Give us courage, Lord, in Jesus' name.